This is NHL Radio.
Time now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the NHL Hour. This is Gary Bettman coming to you live from the Pengrowth Saddle Dome in Calgary, along with Bill Clement, who's at the NHL store powered by Reebok in New York City. And you're listening to us on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, Sirius 208, and NHL.com. The call-in number is 1-877-645-6696. That's 1-877-645-6696. Later in the show, we'll be joined by former Vancouver Canuck great Trevor Linden. And since I'm in Calgary, I will have a special guest joining us to be named in a couple of minutes. Bill Clement, how are you?
I'm fantastic, thanks. How are you? This is like one of those trades with a player to be named at a later date. Or we're holding out on the guest name.
Well, I'll get to it in a minute or two.
But suspense.
I'm sure people can figure it out.
Yeah, I'm sure they can.
It won't be much of a surprise.
By the way,
do you miss me?
I absolutely do. This time you're cheating on me, okay? Because you left. You flew the city, albeit for a good reason. And the good news is I'm counting customers here at the store. And the store, you would love the activity in the store today.
Well, that's good. I want you to go downstairs and buy some Christmas presents for everybody as well.
I got time. I will do that. My son's here with me. We're leaving after the show to drive up to Canada through the winter storm to pick up my mom and bring her down for Christmas. But we'll do a little shopping. We'll do that. Hey, listen, how was last night? I mean, how was the Trevor Linden ceremony?
The Trevor Linden ceremony was spectacular. It was done with elegance, with class. The right people were there. This is an athlete and a person, and I'll emphasize person more, who is absolutely beloved by the city of Vancouver, perhaps like no other athlete has ever been loved by his community. And it was great to be there. You know, I have a bit of a connection with Trevor. Obviously, he was president of the Players Association when we had the work stoppage, and so we spent a lot of time together, and I have nothing but respect and admiration for Trevor based on all of our dealings, because at a very difficult time he showed incredible courage and leadership to get to a point that has enabled us as a league to get to where we are today, because had he not stepped up the way he did, the consequences would have been far more complicated and potentially disastrous than the way we ultimately came out of the work stoppage.
As an adversary and a guy across the table, did his behavior ever change?
Well, he was always professional. He was always somebody that you could talk to and have a reasonable conversation with. He was extremely knowledgeable, savvy. He understood the business of the game. He really was impressive to deal with. And when you have an adversary, you really want somebody who is smart, somebody who you can respect, somebody who you can talk to.
Talking about Trevor Linden, Commissioner Gary Bettman's in Calgary. I'm Bill Clement. I'm in New York. Our call-in number again, 877-NHL on XM, 877-645-6696. Gary, I think you would agree that there are few athletes, if any athlete ever, that's contributed as much to his particular sport, not only on the ice, but off the ice, as Trevor Linden has.
Well, he's been incredibly involved in the community, particularly with children's charities and Canucks Place, which is a hospice for children being treated for cancer in Vancouver. He really has done it all, and he was the president of the Players Association for a fair number of years, and I know he took that burden and responsibility, the being responsible for the livelihoods of 700 players, very seriously. And it was a difficult time for him. But as I said, he always handled himself magnificently. And you know, to say there was a bond forged, perhaps that's the case. But I always think of him in glowing terms. As I said, I wouldn't have been any place else last night than at the ceremony honoring him. His career and him as a person. Also, the night before, just to give you a sense of my traveling, I was in Edmonton watching the Blackhawks score lots of goals against the Oilers. I'm actually sitting in the press box in the Pembroke Saddle Dome watching the Blackhawks skate.
Is that what the noise is? Sticks and
pucks.
That's
exactly what the noise is.
Oh, good. It's, yeah, it's live. Sticks. It's natural. Nothing canned. Nothing staged.
Although it's so far away from the ice, based on my eyesight, I'm glad I don't ever try and won't ever try to do play-by-play. It's way too hard. Although the practice jerseys don't have numbers on them, so that's probably making it harder on me.
Oh, I know. We got to do
listen,
that.
Listen, tomorrow.
What's that?
We got to do what?
Well, we got to put numbers on the practice jerseys for the announcers. You don't know how tough it is to prep for a game watching a team skate saying, who's that? Who's that?
Especially from this distance. Hey, tomorrow is the 91st anniversary of the first games ever played in the National Hockey League. December 19th, 1917. The Montreal Wanderers defeated the Toronto Arenas 10-9. And the Montreal Canadiens, celebrating their centennial this year, defeated the Senators 7-4 in Ottawa. And what's pretty interesting is the Senators are again playing tomorrow night. So they're still around, although in a different form. They're at New Jersey. I think we've come a pretty far distance since 1917. The other thing to keep in mind that's going on is Tuesday in Chicago, under snowy skies, the big rig pulled into Wrigley Field, and the work crews have started putting down the plywood for the rink, and the Winter Classic is actually starting to take shape. And so, as a shameless reminder, on January 1st, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on NBC and the CBC, we have the Winter Classic with the Detroit Red Wings playing the Chicago Blackhawks. And if I'm not mistaken, those two teams have played each other more than any two NHL teams have ever played each other.
And it's
Did
a winner.
You know that?
Yeah, I heard that today. I wouldn't have known that if somebody hadn't mentioned it earlier today. And this, the Winter Classic's gotten so much great publicity and so much publicity, the volume of it, I can't turn around anywhere on any internet site or any printed matter without it, somebody talking about it someplace. More than last year, is this due, do you think, to the success of last year, or the fact that it's Wrigley Field, or the fact that it's Chicago and Detroit, or all of the above?
I'll vote for all of the above. And while we're talking about all of the above, so we've got the Winter Classic we're getting ready for. We've got All-Star in Montreal to help celebrate in the Canadian centennial. Think about that. The Canadians are older than the NHL. And the World Juniors in Ottawa are on their way. And with all that going on, we've got a pretty good regular season going on. Penguins have scored 105 goals, and Evgeny Malkin has scored 49 of them, has points on 49 of them, didn't score all 49, in 30 games. The Sharks are 25-3-3 for 53 points in 31 games. Buffalo's Thomas Vanek has 24 goals, and it isn't even Christmas. The Bruins are playing very, very well and lead the Northeast. And if All-Star Weekend were this weekend, Claude Julien from Boston and Tom Rennie from the Rangers would be coaching the East. And Todd McClellan from San Jose and Mike Babcock from Detroit would be reunited behind the bench of the Western Conference All-Stars. Did you know all that?
No, I didn't. You just that's just at your fingertips, I'm sure. Frank Brown must be hanging around.
And tomorrow... Tomorrow is yet another anniversary, and this will be the key in to who our surprise guest is. In 1995, the Calgary Flames sent Joe Nieuwendyk to the Dallas Stars for Corey Millen and a first-round draft choice named Jerome Iginla. And Tuesday night, when the Flames beat the St. Louis Blues 5-2, Jerome had two goals and two assists for a four-point night. It was the 13th time he's collected 4 points in a game, so that wasn't anything unusual, but it was the second straight time he did it on December 16th, which is kind of interesting. And my understanding is Jerome's on the line with us. Jerome?
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
I'm great. You're somewhere in this building, but I can't see you.
Welcome to Calgary and the Saddle Dome. I'm down just outside the dressing room.
Wow, yeah, and I thank you for the wintry covering you've given. It's about 20 below Celsius, and the city's completely covered in snow, and it's magnificent.
Oh, yeah, Christmas time. That's what you want at Christmas, eh?
That's exactly right. So 13 years ago, the Flames traded Nieuwendyk to Dallas to get you and Corey Millen. What do you remember about that day? Who told you? Where were you? And what was your reaction?
Well, I was actually at the World Junior Camp. Right now, I don't remember what city it was. But it was just, I think the team had just been selected or was going through the process. I think it was just selected. And I woke up in the morning and got a call from Marcel Comeau, our coach of the Canadian team. And he told me that I'd just been traded to Calgary. And honestly, my first thoughts were... junior. It was from Kamloops Blazers. I thought, oh my gosh, to the Calgary Hitmen. And, you know, my heart kind of sunk because I really enjoyed Kamloops. We'd had some success there. And right away, he told me it was the NHL. I hadn't even imagined being traded in the NHL. My thoughts weren't there. You know, it was still felt pretty far off. So, but it was a huge thrill, and I was excited that it was the NHL trade and not the WHL.
How did it change your life?
It was exciting. It was different. You know, on the one hand, being traded so early, you know, I wondered, you know, maybe I wasn't living up to Dallas's expectations, or, you know, they didn't see me, you know, as the choice they took me. But then, you know, after talking to Al Coates and you know, Bob Gainey, and two franchises were going different directions. Calgary was rebuilding, and it was a huge honor to be part of a trade with a great player like Joe Nieuwendyk, and to get a chance to be so close to home in Alberta, I was very, very thrilled.
You're well within range of becoming the Flames' all-time leading scorer. I actually think you're a point away from 800. Is that something you focus on? Do you look at milestones, or they are something you don't concern yourself with?
It's a little bit of both, I guess. You know, I'm very thankful, been very blessed to get to play 12 or 13 years in the NHL and in Calgary, and given great opportunity to play with good players and be on the ice. And, you know, the milestones as far as 800, it's pretty cool to look back on, because when I started in the NHL, you never know, you know, you see the average amount of years and you never know what role you're going to have or, you know, how many you're going to get. So, no, very thankful for that. And but to be with the Flames for this long and to be able to, you know, there were a lot of rumors and a lot of changes, I guess, you know, when the team is rebuilding and over the years. And I wasn't sure I was going to still be here when we make the playoffs, you know, after rebuilding and trying to win a Stanley Cup. So I'm very, very thankful and feel very fortunate to have gotten to be here for as long as I have.
Well, but part of that, Jerome, has been you've decided to stay here as well. When you could have become a free agent and looked at other things, you've made it a point of saying and acting that you want to be in Calgary. What goes into that thought process, and how do you feel about this city and organization?
Lots goes into it. There's a lot of wonderful NHL cities, as you know, and, you know, organizations and stuff. But, no, I've been... you know, very happy playing here. It's a very passionate hockey city, you know, and you take that. It's great for family. You know, my wife and I, Kara, we have three little ones, a girl and two boys. So it's busy at home, and it's a great family place. But to be honest, you know, like I say, there's a lot of really good places and cities and family places. But Calgary, probably one of the biggest reasons is that I believe we can win here. And, you know, the organization is going in the right direction, and we're trying to get better all the time.
Last night I was at the retirement ceremonies in Vancouver for Trevor Linden. If I recall correctly, when Trevor played his last home game as a Canuck, the Flames were in Vancouver as the opponent, and if I'm right, you made sure the Flames players stayed on the bench to join in the crowd salute to him. Tell our listeners what went into that decision and what you were thinking about.
Well, it was a little bit different. You know, before the game, we kind of heard that it could be Trevor's last game, or very possibly was, you know, going to be his last game. And, you know, at the end of the game, you know, we talked a little bit, I guess, before, you know, about that possibility. But at the end of the game, actually, Reggie reminded me, Reggie and I talked, you know, to get the guys back out and you know, guys were very happy to come out. You know, at the end of the game, we're happy we won and things are going, but you're reminded to line up and that it was going to be his last. And you know, we were very happy to be a part of that. Trevor's a great career, but a great competitor. And, you know, a guy that, you know, you look at and you watch and you play against and you really respect because he works so hard and he plays so hard. But he's a good, you know, honest player. He's not a cheap player, but also for what he did for us off the ice as players. We know that he had a very tough, you know, managing 700 players and different, you know, I couldn't imagine going through such a, as president of the NHLPA in such a tough time. And we really appreciated his on-ice and off-ice contributions. And it was an honor to be a part of his last game with him.
We're talking to Jerome McGinley. Jerome, how do you compare this year's Flames team to the one that went to the finals in 04?
I think there's some similarities. I think that in 04 we were a quick team. We were able to put some pressure and play physical. And we had a good combination between youth and some older guys. And I think we have that again this year. I think the speed that Rene Bourque and Glenn Cross, Dell bringing them in with Camilleri and, you know, Bertuzzi's been a great addition. I think up all the way through, I think that, you know, we're more balanced and we're able to find more goals. You know, the league since the lockout, I think you guys made it a mandate with the players and stuff to improve scoring. And I think that the... I think that's happening, and I think it's a more important role than, you know, you need more scoring now than you did, say, in 04, but I think we have that. But there's a lot of good teams, and we're getting better, and you know, we still have the same great goaltender and one of the best defensemen, you know, more than one of them, you know, Reggie and Dion and the whole group, but some of the best young defensemen in the league. So it's exciting.
Well, and you were part of those rule changes because you were one of the five players on the competition committee.
Yeah, that was a thrill. That was fun to be in the room there and just to see what goes on. But, you know, it was, I think there was some, the NHL has made some great rules changes and continues to make them. One of my favorite is still that puck over the glass. I know some people want to get rid of that, but I think it adds so much that it used to be so frustrating to, you know, you'd hem a team in and they just fired over the glass and say it was an accident and that would be the end of it. Now I think it requires a little bit more skill in the defenseman, and I think that's been my favorite one that you guys changed.
Well, you were an integral part of that. I'm going to let you go because I know you guys just recently got back in town. Thanks for joining me. Happy holidays and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks for having me, Gary. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
That was Jerome McGinley. And he's in a category with Trevor Linden as far as being class acts on the ice and off the ice. We're going to step out. Again, our phone number, 877-645-6696. We'll get to your calls, and you can ask Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the National Hockey League, anything that's on your mind. We'll be back with the NHL Hour in a moment.
This is Patrick Kane of the Chicago Blackhawks, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Actually, I'm watching Patrick skate below me on the ice. Bill Clement, did you pick the Buffalo Springfield?
No, I did not. I think Greg Baldinger gets credit for that. Was that you?
That was me. That was me. I understand on the line is Trevor Linden, formerly of the Vancouver Canucks. Trevor, you with us?
I am. How are you, gentlemen, today?
Oh, we're doing great. How about you the day after a great celebration of your career and you as a person?
It was a special night. You know, I was deeply touched. There's some ex-teammates and so many people that were so instrumental in my career there that I was able to catch up with, and it was a lot of fun.
You know, as I was there last night, and frankly, every time I've been to Vancouver while you were playing, it was clear to me that there was a love affair between you and the fans in Vancouver. Was that something you set out to do, and or did it just happen? And if so, how do you account for it?
Gary, that's a great question, and that's a question I have a difficult time answering. And I guess the best way I can describe it, or one of the theories may be that, you know, I came here right out of high school, and I think people identified with that kid that came from Medicine Hat and kind of watched him develop as a hockey player and watched him kind of grow up as a person, and that connection was made quite early in the process. And I went away for a few years and was able to come back and in a different capacity. And so, you know, that's the best way I can explain it, that for whatever reason, I think that we'd been through a lot together, and I'd made some mistakes, you know, and we just had this connection. And it was, I feel very fortunate to have that, for sure.
Who were the people that were most influential on you to make you the man you are today?
Well, I think certainly my parents, no question. I grew up with two brothers, an older brother and a younger brother. And then, you know, I think most importantly was when I was drafted, I think the Griffith family, you know, had a real community sense out in Vancouver. And Quinn and Brian Burke, you know, had a real program here that I came into, which helped a lot. And I think from a player standpoint, I look to the opportunity to play with people like Stan Smeal and, you know, and a fellow like Ryan Walter and Randy Gregg and Tim Hunter. I mean, those guys are all I played with all those guys kind of 20, 21, 22 years old. And I think that's a real influential time.
What is it that you think made you the type of leader you've been credited for being on the ice? Did that come naturally, or did you have to step it up?
Well, I think that through my minor hockey days, and certainly into junior, I was kind of the responsible kid, and quite honestly, I think it was something that I felt fairly comfortable with and came to me more natural. And I think that I think one of the things is just being comfortable in that situation, and I think I was. You know, at 21 years old, I was named captain of the team, which certainly is young, but I think at the time it was, for me, something I felt comfortable with.
You know, you've also, and maybe it's consistent with that, you've also been perceived to be a big game player, that you'd step it up and really have some of your best games in games that really mattered. Is that something consistent with what you just said, or was there an additional element to that as well?
You know, I think that's a situation that maybe you get a little confidence in. You have some opportunities in some big games and some game sevens. I think it probably started as far back as the first Memorial Cup I played in, the final. I was able to score a couple goals, and I think, you know, you start to develop some confidence in big games, and you start to feel comfortable and have that belief that it's your time. And I was fortunate to be able to have my best games at, you know, during the biggest games of the year.
Well, actually, you mentioned Game 7, and I think back to Game 7 in 94 when the Canucks played the Rangers at Madison Square Garden in the Stanley Cup Final. That was a big game for you, although the Canucks came up short. How painful is it to get that close and not get it all? And then does that pain dissipate, and do you look back at that as a good time, or does it still nag at you that it was so close?
I think it's one of those things when you go to the seventh game of the Stanley Cup Final and lose, I think it sticks with you for certainly a time. And to this day, when I talk about, you know, a highlight, I don't necessarily say the 94 final because we lost. I look to the Western Conference final when we beat the Leafs to win the Western Conference as more of a highlight because we beat the Leafs. But that was a devastating loss. I think when you play that long and that hard and come up empty-handed, it was a very empty feeling. It was a tough one to get over, no question.
Can imagine. So let me change gears on you for a second. What were you thinking when you agreed to become president of the Players Association?
You know, I think it gets back to that responsible Trevor thing that You know, for me, Gary, it was one of those things that I was always interested, and I think that one of the character traits of player representatives were always kind of the guys that, you know, that were responsible and kind of and cared, and I guess they couldn't say no either. But so I, at an early age, took an interest in things, and I was interested in the business of the game and how it worked and how it was structured. And, you know, when I had the opportunity in 1998 when I was asked to take that position, you know, obviously I knew it came with a lot of responsibility, and at times, you know, you're putting yourself out there on the firing line, so to speak. But you know, as difficult as some of those situations were, you know, if I had it to do all over again, I would definitely accept the position, and I may do some things differently along the way, but you know, I would definitely accept the position because it was a very fascinating time in my life and something that I will always look back on, and you know, and at the end of the day, I enjoyed working with some very bright people on both sides and an effort to try and solve the problems that we had.
What was going through your mind? How were you feeling as the work stoppage was going on? I mean, here you were responsible for 700 players. Were you sleeping at night?
not a lot. It was an interesting time. Obviously, one of the real challenges we had is when you have 700 players, not unlike when you have 30 teams, you have people with different ideas and agendas and this sort of thing. So, you know, it was difficult. I spent pretty much every day talking on the phone, and different guys were calling to complain, and some guys were calling to get information, and some guys were calling to support. So it was a pretty good mix. But, you know, it was that was the toughest thing, is to try and figure out what was the best thing for the collective group. And, you know, it's sometimes hard to figure what the collective group wants, because you've got a lot of the guys that are maybe happy with what you are thinking or doing, they're not going to say anything, and the ones that make the most noise are the ones that aren't happy. So you kind of have to balance that and just really try to rely on the other committee members and try to figure out what's the best thing for this group.
You know, there are some people listening to us, and I'm talking to Trevor Linden, who might think it's kind of bizarre that I'm interviewing you on this subject. But I'm actually just trying to give people a little bit of insight on something which I guess will forever link us with a common bond. And frankly, you know, and I said this yesterday in Vancouver, were it not for your courage and leadership, we wouldn't all be where we were today. And so I am grateful to you as well for the way things were conducted from your side.
Well, thank you. I mean, it was a very difficult time, and I think our biggest challenge as players was to get over some hurdles and figure out what was the right thing and what was the best thing for our group. And at the end of the day, I think we were able to do that. And you know, for the most part, I think guys have been happy. So, although I haven't heard that, I only hear when guys are unhappy. But you know, that's the nature of the beast.
Same on my side of the business as well. How's retirement treating you? How are you spending your time? And how much do you miss the daily routine of being on a team?
There's no doubt. Anytime you do something for as long as I did, I was a professional player for 20 years and played you know, junior hockey before that. So I definitely miss the day-to-day activity of the game. I miss the game, and certainly miss the guys and the people involved with the game. But you know, I mean, I've been able to do some things I haven't done. I'm an avid cyclist, so I enjoy that. And I was able to watch my wife run the New York City Marathon, and doing some cross-country skiing and some downhill skiing, which I wasn't able to do before. So obviously working on a couple small real estate projects that, given the economic circumstances, are a real challenge. But so basically just taking a little time out from the game right now and just trying to figure out where my passion lies and what's my next step, basically.
Well, and also you didn't mention it, but you're incredibly involved in community service, and I think that's something that the community respects about you as well. Last night, You're standing on the ice. They're raising your number and name to the rafters. Earlier in the day, they had dedicated a gate in your honor for people coming in and out of GM Place. When you're going through a ceremony like that and you're being incredibly honored, immortalized, if you will, is it a blur or is it emotional where you start reflecting on things that have transpired throughout your life?
I think for me it was I tried to really stop and take it all in and really be in the moment because I think I'm one that would just want to kind of, you know, get it over with. I can't take all this attention, but you know, it was one of those nights where I think the moment that really was special for me was when the banner was going up, and that was just a whole collection of thoughts of, you know, going back to when I played minor hockey and junior hockey, and my whole career kind of flashed through my head, and I guess the recognition that this is, you know, kind of the final chapter and closure in a way.
Or the first chapter of a new part of your life.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's no doubt about that you know, you close one chapter and start a new one. I'm not exactly sure where that goes, but that's my challenge moving forward.
Maybe it's the senior tour. I understand you know your way around the golf course. Mike Weir sent congratulations to you by video last night, and the Aquilini family gave you a trip to the Masters as a gift. Exactly how good a golfer are you?
Well, I was a better golfer before I started riding my bike. I've actually put the clubs away a little bit and been doing a whole lot of cycling. So I was I got my handicap down to about 3 on a good day, and the Masters for me was always my favorite weekend of the year, and it was for many reasons. In Vancouver, it kind of is a signal that spring is here, and you know, the flowers are blooming, and you know, it's also a signal for a hockey player that the playoffs are right around the corner, which is the most exciting time. And my birthday is always on Masters weekend, so you know, I love watching the golf tournament and everything else. So it was it's always been a special weekend for me. So I look forward to being there in person.
A 3? If you and I were playing, we'd be done after the first hole. You'd have me. Trevor, great to be with you. Thanks for joining me. Congratulations again on last night. It was well-deserved, and I hope to see you soon.
Great, Gary. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Take care. That was Trevor Linden. Mr. Clement?
Yes, sir. I had the pleasure of and the good fortune to broadcast Game 7 of the first round in 1989 between the Calgary Flames. And that was the year Calgary won the Stanley Cup, and Vancouver took them to a Game 7 that went to overtime in Calgary. And we'll never know how close Trevor Linden could have come to a Stanley Cup in his rookie year, because he just skated up and down the ice, and he and Joel Otto were dragging one another all over the ice that night. Fantastic guy. I want you to know what, Gary, one of the things I'm curious about is what you were like to Trevor Linden across the table. Didn't get a chance to ask him. We're going to reserve that for the next time. How about it?
I think the circumstances of the interview were strange enough to begin with. That you know, and I hope he was comfortable with them, because really what I was trying to do was give people an insight of what it was like for him having to go through what was a difficult time for all of us.
Yep, without a doubt. A lot of dedicated people involved in that process, and some dedicated callers are hanging on. And I spoke out of turn when we went to the first break. I said, we get to your calls. This time, I mean it. 877-645-6696. Back to your calls right after this.
Hi, this is Ryan Miller of the Buffalo Sabres, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Thank you, Ryan. Bill, I think it's time we go to the callers. I apologize that we've kept our callers on hold so long, but the opportunity to have both the Jerome and Trevor talk to us and our listeners, I thought was a worthwhile stray of the format.
Just in case we want to get some well-rested callers that haven't been holding as long, the number is 877-645-6696. But we will get to those who were patient right now.
And most patient of all has been Alan from Albany. Alan, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204, Sirius 208.
Hi, Commissioner. My question is regarding television rights. Albany, New York is the longtime home of the AHL River Rats. And we're an affiliate of New Jersey and now Carolina. In addition to that, we're about 140 miles away from the Rangers and the Devils, and maybe 160 miles away from the Islanders and the Bruins. But the problem that we have up here is that the TV rights seem to be owned by the Buffalo Sabres. And we don't have a handful of people in this area that really follow that team.
I would have to go check them. I know that you get MSG Network, if I'm not mistaken.
We're totally blacked out when there's a Sabre and a Ranger game on the same time. And that's what the problem is.
That's interesting.
The majority of folks are Ranger fans.
I would have to go check the territorial maps in terms of the broadcast territories. Let me make a note of that, and that's something I have to look at. Check off the top of my head, I don't remember exactly why Buffalo does or doesn't get Albany. I don't doubt what you're telling me, and I hear the fact that you're saying there are more New York Ranger and Islander and Devils fans in Albany than there are Sabres. Although the Sabres are worth watching, they're quite a good team, and New York is pretty passionate with it.
When you're a Ranger fan, the only time you care when Buffalo is playing is when they're against the Rangers. And, you know, it's 300 and some miles away, like I said, and it's a trip that nobody's going to make this time of year. So I'm sure that we're not the only one in the country that has this problem, but it is kind of discouraging to turn on a Time Warner cable and have a blackout. So I thought
I'm drawing a bit of a – no, I'm glad you told me. I'm drawing a bit of a blank on what the television regions are, and I've got to go take another look, which is something I'll do before our next show. And I'll hopefully be in a position to better respond. With that note, let's go to Donald on Long Island. Donald, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204 and Sirius 208.
How you doing, guys? I just want to say it's an honor to be on the phone talking to both of you. That being said, also...
Thank you.
I hear a lot of people pick on you, Mr. Bettman. They say a lot of things. I personally love the NHL right now. I think it's better than it's ever been. I love everything about it. My question is, I hear that, a lot of people say that the shootout isn't the right way to end a hockey game. I, once again, love the shootout. I think it's very fun. It's very fun to watch. Are there any plans to possibly change that and go to an overtime again?
No. Overwhelmingly, the feedback we get from our fans is they like the shootout for the regular season. Because while some people don't like the shootout, lots more people would prefer to have the shootout than end in a tie. And with the regular season being what it is, the schedule, the travel needs, and the like, particularly wear and tear on the players, I don't think we can play the type of sudden death overtime we play in the playoffs, because that could blow a team out for a week or so and actually cause them not to get to the next game on time. So we think what we have now has been working very well. It's not something we would consider for the playoffs, but for the regular season, instead of ending in a tie like we used to, having the shootout we think has been great. And when you look at our arenas, when the shootout takes place, everybody's on their feet, everybody's excited. And what was interesting to me is when we first went to the shootout, there were lots of people who didn't want to see the game end in the five-minute overtime. They wanted to see the shootout. So that's not something that we're contemplating. But thank you for the call. Ed in North Carolina, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204, Sirius 208.
Gary and Bill, thanks for taking the call. Excuse me. Let me make a comment about when we have to wait for for the opportunity to chat with you folks. When you have high-quality representatives of the league like Trevor and Jerome that we have to wait for, it's an honor and pleasure to wait, because it just goes back to my feeling that the quality of individual and player that we have in the NHL far surpasses those of the other professional sports. When you hear these, especially the younger fellas, being so well-spoken and so well-educated and just all-around great guys that you'd really want to meet in person, I think it's a tribute to your league.
Well, that's nice of you to say, although I do feel badly that you had to be on hold as long as you were, although I'm glad you felt it was worth it. That was the judgment we made in terms of how this show came about, because since I'm here in Calgary and Jerome was available, I thought it would be crazy not to have the listeners have the opportunity to hear what he had to say. And Trevor, being Trevor, particularly in light of the retirement ceremonies last night, was incredibly timely. So thank you for being patient and holding on. Do you have a question that we can answer for you?
It almost made me forget what my comment or question to you was.
Well, that happens to me all. That happens to me all the time.
and I know that there's some concern and there's some arguments going on about it. But I wonder if you would comment on and whether there's further work that the league has to do to take care of the confusion about Jason Blake's tipsy-do goal there in the shootout, as to whether, you know, what the real rule is about moving forward or moving the puck forward, and how that was how it was decided that goal was legit.
Well, I think I've been on the road, so I haven't had a chance to see it, and I keep missing it on the highlights. And I haven't had a chance to fire up my laptop and go to NHL.com in this shameless plug to see the highlights. But my understanding is, as long as you're still progressing with possession of the puck heading towards the net, you can continue to play it. Coley Campbell, at some point in the last year, sent out a memo clarifying exactly what I just described, namely, as long as you've got control and you're continuing to move towards the net, you can do some strange and unusual things with the puck, as long as you don't, I suppose, put it in your mouth and spit it in. But short of that, if our players can be that creative and entertaining and exciting, you know, that's great for our fans. Why don't we take our next caller? I'm sorry, go ahead, Bill.
Gary, the Pierre-Marc Bouchard patented move from Minnesota that really started that spin-around move, that's exactly the move that Jason Blake made. And I can understand what some callers are saying, because it does appear that perhaps there was forward momentum being stopped. But in these cases, the player never comes to a dead stop. He is still in complete motion. The puck is never stopped moving backwards, other than to move it around the body and to score with it. So I'm glad we're one way or the other. I'm just glad that these moves in the shootouts are allowed. I think if a player came to a complete stop, waited for the goalie to move, and then shot it in the open net, then there would be an issue. But motion is part of it, I believe, and Jason Blake just never stopped. He was a whirling dervish on the play. It was a beautiful goal.
Well, and for anybody who's curious, you can look at Rule 25.3. I believe that's what it is. I don't have the rule book in front of me. That's either off the top of my head or Frank Brown's. But take a look. I think that will give people the guidance they want. John in Nashville, you're on with Bill and Gary. Welcome to XM 204, Sirius 208.
Yeah, gentlemen, thank you for having us.
Thank you for hanging in there with us.
My name is Ian. I'm a Nashville Predators fan. My brother has a question for you.
Okay, I'd be happy to hear his question. What is it?
Has there been any talk about Eastern Conference teams playing Western Conference teams in the early rounds of the playoffs?
Traditionally not. We think the regular season lends itself to setting up conference-based playoffs. Those are the teams that traditionally have and develop the rivalries. They're the ones they've played each other more during the regular season. Obviously, the league for a couple of years had a 1-16 seeding format, but the sense was that there was not enough sense of rivalry. There was too much travel, and it just wasn't practical. We generally play the playoffs to about 99% of capacity, and our ratings are strong on television, stronger than the regular season even. And so we think what we have is working pretty well, and we really haven't been contemplating a change. But that's a good question, and I'm glad you called in to ask it. Why don't we talk to Marv in Florida? This is XM 204, Sirius 208. You're on with Bill and Gary.
Hi, gentlemen. I split my ear between Long Island and Florida. And although the Panthers have gotten hot recently, I don't have to tell you it's been eons since they've made the playoffs. And about my Islanders, I want to discuss them next. I just want you to be aware of what's happened to hockey coverage down here. The Palm Beach Post, which used to have great hockey coverage, barely covers the sport anymore. They both the Sun Sentinel and the Post cut out all box scores except for the local team. The Post doesn't even travel any guys anymore, and this is all they claim because of cutdowns and the difficulties in the newspaper business. And last week, while the Panthers were having this great Western run, none of the games were on television. It's a shame. It really is. And if you can't build the sport because, you know, people are going to be coming to it, at least let them see it on TV, and the coverage here is poor. But my other point on the Islanders.
Well, actually, let me respond to that one first, if you don't mind.
Okay.
I'm unhappy with the Palm Beach Post coverage as well. I think it's a combination of the business that the newspaper industry is experienced, which is a complete decline. It's decisions like that where they alienate readers and potential readers by not covering the things that people think are important, that newspapers are losing their circulation and they're losing their advertising, which is a cycle of further and further cutbacks. The good news is you can get great coverage of what's going on in our games on NHL.com and on a variety of other websites that cover sports. Panthers have their own site as well. And so if you need highlights, you want game stories, you want access to the team that obviously the newspapers aren't giving you, then there are other ways to get it. That's the good news about the new technologies, the so-called digital technologies. The other thing is, you and people who feel the same way should let the Palm Beach Post know that you're incredibly unhappy.
I've called them several times, and they say they are aware of it, but it's the cutbacks. You also go to bed at 10:30. You can't get a score if the game ends after 10:30, which I used to, you know, do it at 12. But you can do it
on NHL.com. But the other thing is, the other thing I want to make is, my guess is, as the Panthers continue to play well, they will have no choice but to increase the coverage because more and more people were going to demand it. Listen, the Panthers went through a bit of a lull in terms of their performance, not making the playoffs, I think, for 8 years, give or take. And as a result, it made the decision that the Post may have had to make for business reasons perhaps easier in their mind. But there are fortunately alternate sources. By the way, before you ask your question about the Islanders, you sound an awful lot like Stan Fischler. Has anybody told you that? I guess not.
He didn't like the comparison.
Oh, well, he sound like Stan Fischler?
Absolutely. I thought it was Stan putting us on for a sec.
Oh, well, I'm sorry we got cut off. I hope you guys didn't do that in New York because he had a second question. If he calls back, put him back through again because I didn't mean to cut him off. Actually, I didn't do it. You guys did. Why don't we talk to Jeff in Boston? Jeff, you're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204.
Gary, Bill, thanks so much for taking
Sirius
my call.
Sirius 208.
Our Gary, pleasure. Great to speak and with you.
Thank you.
I have three points for you. One is I generally podcast. I subscribe to your podcast and listen to it on the weekend. And there's many links on the NHL.com podcast that haven't been updated this season.
We should fix that.
You should.
And we will.
All right. Very good. Secondly, regarding power play statistics, it seems to me it would make a lot more sense if you divided goals by 2 minutes of power play time, as opposed to having a team have 15 seconds of power play time and going 0-for-1. Has there ever been any consideration?
You're absolutely right in terms of the purity of the stat, because and for our listeners who might not follow what you're saying, if you wind up on the power play for 5 seconds, it counts in the statistics and your power play efficiency. The only problem with doing that, and it happens to be a good idea, is it then makes all current statistics irrelevant to comparing them to prior statistics. But in terms of the purity of your efficiency, either in scoring or penalty killing, you're absolutely right about total number of seconds and then dividing it by 2 minutes. That's a very good point.
Thank you. I'm a big baseball fan and love statistics, and it just seems to make a lot more sense to me. Lastly, I have a national TV idea for you. Living here in Boston, Dennis Leary, huge hockey guy, along with Lenny Clark, and this could even get Bill back on national television. Why don't you have HBO or Showtime, something like that, do a commercial-free, no edits, let the four-letter words stay in there, mic everything up, and I think it would attract a whole new audience, and it would be incredibly entertaining just to let Dennis Leary or someone of that nature go at it unedited for an entire hockey game.
Interesting point. It's actually something, not exactly, but similarly, that we've discussed about what would happen if we were on a service for a select number of games to have a commercial-free, I'm not so sure about unedited, but
3 minutes.
Maybe not fully edited broadcast.
Maybe even Sean there, Avery there are, see the color.
That's exactly my point. But
I wondered how I fit into that, though. How did I fit in there with Dennis Leary?
Actually,
I guess I could just let it rip, right?
Well, actually, the notion was to get you on National Games, but you are on National Games because you do the NHL Network.
Absolutely. But still, you know, but that notion and this suggestion is what I've talked to so many broadcasters about, that one last broadcast on their way out so that they could say anything they want, any way they want, about anybody they want.
Why would you want to go out in that kind of blaze of, and I won't say blaze of glory, it would be a blaze of infamy.
No, well, we joke about it. I mean, it's not something that anybody would seriously want to do, but we joke about it, and some of the things that we would actually say, given the opportunity, no one would ever follow through with it, I don't believe. I wouldn't.
Well, I mean, haven't there been times where you've been on the air where you've had a funny thought and you dare not repeat it, but you think about what would happen if you did?
Well, sometimes I've gone too far and actually gone through with it.
Oh, it's probably been worse than that.
Yep.
Oh, Marv is back from Florida. Marv, welcome back from Florida.
Hi. By the way, Sorry. Stan is a friend of mine. Got me my first job working with Herb Gordon in the Ranger Publicity Office in 1958. And I've known Stan since 1952, but we
can't make this stuff up.
Two different people, I got to tell you. But
I didn't think you were Stan. I didn't think you were Stan, but you sound an awful lot like him.
I know him very, very well. Hopefully, he's listening, so he'll tell you. But what I wanted to say about the island is: are you aware of the fact that in half the island you can't even hear the radio broadcast? They just added an Eastern Long Island part to their radio network, but it's a disgrace. It really is, and I think it all has to do with mismanagement and the fact that they're still in an old arena. Is there any arena there?
Yes, there is a hope. Charles Wong has been a terrific owner. He's been committed to this franchise emotionally, financially, and without him, Lord knows where the Islanders would be. I understand they're waving their hands at me that we've got less than a minute to go. Marv, thank you for calling back. Stick with the Islanders. Charles Wong is. And Bill, happy holidays. We're not going to be back until after the new year on January 8th. I wish all our listeners nothing but the best. You too, Bill.
Same to you, Gary. Thanks for being part of the show, everyone. And thanks to the trigger man, Mike Trigiani, for working the board in Toronto. Dangerous Dan Cronin here in New York. As Gary said, we're going to take Christmas Eve off and New Year's Eve off. And we will be back 4 p.m. Eastern, January the 8th, for the NHL Hour. Until then, enjoy your hockey and happy holidays, everybody.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.